Welcome to Chic Perspectives. I'm your host, Elizabeth Gordon. I hope that you're having a chic week, and I thank you for joining me today. I've got a wonderful guest for you. In a moment, we're going to bring on U.S. Congressman Marsha Blackburn to talk about her new book, Life Equity, and Women in Leadership Roles. First, I'd like to give a thank you to our sponsor, Pink Payments, merchant services for women, by women, and supporting women. And now, let me introduce you to Marsha. Marsha Blackburn is a wife, a mother, and a businesswoman. She currently serves in the U.S. House of Representatives. Marsha was the first woman ever elected a state senator for the 23rd District in Tennessee in 1998, and she's gone on to a very fruitful career in politics. Marsha, welcome to Chic Perspectives.
It is so good to be with you, Elizabeth. Thank you for having me on.
Absolutely. Well, I've really enjoyed your book, and I want to give our audience a taste of some of the concepts in here because I think it is so fantastic what you have outlined as far as the differences between the male model of leadership and the female model of leadership. So talk a little bit about how you see the differences in women taking on leadership roles today.
Absolutely. And we have an entire chapter called Women in the Leadership Disconnect. It's chapter 2 of the book. And then I come back in chapter 8 and look at a feminine model of leadership. And basically, what you see happening is that over the years, men have had a tendency to like organizations that are top-down.
Exactly. Well, it's the military model, which you talk
about.
That's
right. It is. And I do use the military as the best example of that top-down type model that people have, that men have a tendency to embrace. They like making the decisions and giving the orders. What we have seen happen in the past decade in our country is that people are moving more and more toward flatter organizations. And because of this, 21st century leadership is going to have a more feminine feel to it. People want to have leaders who are going to listen. They want to have leaders who are going to nurture and are going to role model and are going to mentor individuals. And we see this coming back all across in every sector of our society. High schools talk about having the importance of leaders who come in and mentor young men and women. And companies are now looking at having individuals who've been with the company a while mentor individuals who are just coming to work for that company, and they realize the importance of that. We also are going to see leaders that are action-oriented and are problem solvers. And when you sum up what people are looking for in 21st century leaders, all of those concepts I've just mentioned, Elizabeth, come to the top of the list, and all of those have a more feminine feel to them. They're strengths that women possess and women bring to the decision-making process, empowering individuals, restructuring organizations so that they're flatter, choosing to teach and to mentor, making certain that they're role modeling, leaders that value openness and discourse and civility, having that dialogue with everybody that is on the team because they realize that team building and then communicating with that team will lead to successful conclusions and outcomes.
Absolutely. I mean, you've seen this revolution kind of slowly over the last 10, 15 years in corporate America. Now it's being mirrored in a lot of the other areas of society. One of the things that I hear sometimes from women, when you talk about leadership, sometimes women don't feel like they want to be a leader. And you talk about how leadership really is influence. And when you reframe it like that, because leadership grew up in that male-dominated mode, we tend to think, well, leaders have to be dictators. They have to, you know, be autocratic. They have to tell people what to do. And the idea of influence is a very similar concept. And when you really push women and say, well, don't you want to make a difference? They say, yes, absolutely. So tell me how you think that leadership and influence are really kind of one and the same.
I will. And what is so interesting about this, through the past couple of decades in speaking with women's organizations, I would talk about leadership, and invariably I would have someone say, "Oh no, 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 no! I'm not a leader."
Right, that's not for me. That sounds like a bit much. I just want to do a good job, but I don't know if I want to lead.
I want to solve problems. I want to take action. But then I would say, "Well, tell me about your sphere of influence." You know, if they balked at the word leadership, then my immediate next question was to say, "Okay, tell me about your sphere of influence and give me an example of where you have used that." And they light up, because they love to talk about getting things done. And they will talk about their sphere of influence, whether it is in the not-for-profit world or activities with their children or at their church or within their company. They'll talk about how they've pulled people from different parts of the company and really built a team that can get things done. And I absolutely love that. And I realize that what women do is take that softer side of it and say, you know what, I am an influential person who can help reprogram where people are putting their energy, rather than saying, I am a leader. But in essence, they are the most effective leaders, because women realize that leadership is not as it appears, but as it performs. And I think that is so important, and such an important concept for women to really have as a takeaway from the leadership discussion. You can assign the title of leader. People can be elected to the position of leader, but leadership is an action word. It is a verb, and it requires you to do something. And that is where we have a big difference. Women are very strong on leadership. I had an interesting thing happen, Elizabeth, in the election season last fall. I had someone say, they were talking about a person that was running, and they said, oh, you know, they just look like a leader. They look like somebody that walked out of central casting for a leader. And I said, okay, describe that to me.
Right.
Describe what you think a leader ought to look like. And then describe for me what you think a leader should do. And they were dumbfounded when they had to put the definition to those words. They realized the disconnect that was there. And they, oh, well, you know, the backtracking.
Right. What I meant.
Again, right. And so, and that's one of the reasons also that I use a phrase regularly when I'm talking with women. And I say, look, you know, this is not about demanding rights. It's about deploying your gifts. And at this time in our society, women are uniquely qualified for their gifting of leadership.
I think there's such a great opportunity in front of us because of all of the wonderful women that have paved the way before and really broken down a lot of those barriers. Women today in the United States have an immense opportunity to embrace. I want you to tell us a little bit about being called to lead, because you talk in your book about your story of, you know, you were living a contented life, doing, you were involved in the community, but then there was a situation where you were kind of called upon to step up and take a larger role. And that obviously was a big stepping stone to a lot of big things.
Right, and I think so many women are like me. They're a wife, they're a mother, they're a businesswoman. They're busy with different activities in their life. And we as women, many times, instead of bragging about what we've done, we wait to be invited to lead. And an opportunity like that arose for me with my county party, my county Republican Party. I'm a Republican member of the House. And I was asked to, first I'd been asked to serve on the election commission, which I was thrilled to do, and I did a good job there. And then I had some of the nominating committee from the county party ask me to take the leadership role and to be the county party chairman, which I did, and I performed well, did a good job there. Then there was an office that was going to open up, and people said, well, why don't you put your name on the ballot and run for this? And I thought, well, I'm not sure about that. But I thought, you know what? The worst thing that can happen is somebody will say, no, I won't vote for you, and I will lose the election. And I did lose my first race. And we're going to have those things happen, but we have to learn from them and move on, which I did. And then there were other opportunities that presented themselves for me to serve in the state senate in Tennessee, for me to be able to come on and serve in Congress, and how very pleased I am that those are opportunities that I have had.
Absolutely. And I think what I think is so important for people to take away is that we all are faced with opportunities ongoing, but oftentimes there's a little voice in our head that says, well, maybe I'm not good enough for that, or maybe that's over my head, right? The self-doubt kind of creeps in, and it can be very detrimental if we let that take charge. Right. So
it certainly can. And that is why there is a full chapter in the book called Why We Undervalue Ourselves and How to Stop. And as I wrote the book, I used a little quote to open the chapter of each book. In chapter 4, which is Why We Undervalue Ourselves and How to Stop, I use a quote that the author of the quote is unknown, but I think it is so relevant. If you really put a small value upon yourself, rest assured that the world will not raise your price. And I think that's
so true.
Right. And people will respond to us many times as we indicate we want to be responded to. And if we feel like what we've done and what we have to say is not worthy, then that is why they will respond in that way. And it's so important for women to realize that their strengths plus their strengths, which are their natural giftings, their God-given giftings, and their experiences, what they've been able to do and accomplish in their life, plus their passions, equal their life's equity. And that life equity is something that makes them uniquely themselves, and it does deserve to be used and shared.
Right, that there is a lot of value to what we often don't put value on. And I'm sure that in your position now that you're meeting a lot of extremely successful people, right? You're in this environment where you're getting to observe some of the habits and the thoughts and the behaviors of other leaders.
Absolutely.
What are some of the things they do or they believe that enable them to achieve the success that they have?
And studying what other people do is an important part of it. And watching how women balance and learning from women how they balance different roles in their life and how they approach opportunities. And in the book, what we did was to profile different women in the book who have come forward, and they have great stories of how they have used experiences and how they have changed their lives. Because we learn from that. We look at how people have changed their role, how they have taken on new opportunities. And Tracy Holland, who is out of Dallas and really moved forward, basically custom designing a career for herself because of wonderful skills that she had in being a seamstress, and has used that to become a decorator. Melinda Scruggs-Gales, who is just a great person in the music industry, she has certainly learned how to balance family, how to balance enthusiasm, and then how to take those talents into the entertainment industry. Susan Levine, who did the same thing in New York City with a travel industry. Tamara Quinn, who grew up in Baghdad and brought her skills to bear working in the energy industry here in the U.S. and is now back working, helping with some of the outreach in Iraq. So there's lots of different women, different types of personalities and different backgrounds, and talking about what they have done, the lessons they have learned, and their sharing of those lessons with our readers.
And I love the stories because it makes you realize that there are so many skills that we acquire in day-to-day life that are extremely transferable to the business arena or the area of public service or a lot of other leadership roles. And there are experiences that we've had just because we're women and because we've taken a stand and a step in our own personal life, but they've given us strength and skills that we can bring over to the business life as well.
Well, that's exactly right. And one of the things that we have, we want to be certain is that people realize the importance of that transferable commodity. In the book, I tell a little story that is, I think it is really funny. It's from when I was out campaigning for Congress, and it's one of those eureka moments. And it was hot, and I was tired, and I walked into this little cafe on a town square and walked up to this gentleman that looked like he had been working outside all morning. I handed him my push card that had my information on it, and I said, "Hi, I'm State Senator Marsha Blackburn. I'm running for Congress, and I sure would appreciate having your vote." And he hardly even looked up at me, and he said, "Little lady, what qualifies you for the U.S. House of Representatives?" And I thought, you know what, I probably am not going to get this vote. So I really was just a little flippant with the remark at first, but there was something in there that said, you know what, this is all of value. And I said, "You know, sir, I've been the three-year-old choir director, the room mother chairman, and the Girl Scout cookie mom, and if you can handle those jobs, you can handle the U.S. House of Representatives." And anybody who's ever had those jobs knows what great training that is. And I walked on and worked the little cafe, and he watched me. And when I got ready to leave the restaurant, I felt like maybe I was going to get his vote because he called me over and he said, "Little lady, you win this thing. What are we going to call you? Congress girl, Congress lady, Congress person?" I had never voted for a woman before. But there was a glimmer of hope there, and I thought, aha, you know, he realizes too. He relates to that there is value in all of those skills.
Exactly. You allowed him to see the possibility of how that did make a lot of sense.
And that's exactly right.
And it's so true. I mean, we're obviously, there's a varying scale of people's views on women these days. I think that a lot of people have very progressive views. There's some people that still need some, you know, a little bit more coaxing for them to be able to see women taking on leadership roles. But by exhibiting your personal power, you know, really standing in your strength and being able to brag about yourself, right? To be able to say, "This is why I can do this." We're slowly shattering that old paradigm.
That's
and
right.
People
and
are
being
seeing
able
this.
To successfully talk about it. And that is why we have on our website, yourlifeequity.com, some tools to help people assess their strengths and then write their own story. Because if you don't tell your story, nobody else is going to tell it for you.
Exactly. And once you're feeling very strong in yourself, one of the other things I think is so crucial to continuing to expand your journey is the idea of networking and connecting. Now, women are natural connectors, right? I mean, we are relationship builders,
right.
But sometimes we don't use that skill in the way, you know, that it can be leveraged in more of a business or political arena. How can we leverage that natural strength of connecting and building relationships to make it a productive force for us?
Well, and that beginning to develop that relationship is one of the components that people have to be a little bit more of a risk taker and move forward on, because you're right. They establish the relationship, but then they don't make those contacts, go back to those individuals, seek to learn from them, stay in close touch with them, and try to work with them, find a way to associate with them so that you know you're going to be learning from them. When you're with good people, it is easier to be good at things. So develop that relationship of trust and work begin to work with them. That is how you expand and deepen those relationships and not have them just be superficial relationships.
And in the arena that you're working in now, Marcia, I mean, is it all come down to relationships primarily?
You know, I think a lot of it does. And one of the things that I encourage people to do as they are writing their story is to write about their philosophy of life. Write about their philosophy of how you should approach things so that they know themselves and they develop that trust and integrity with themselves and with others that they want to have a deeper relationship with. And then, you know, as you get into situations where maybe right now you're looking for a job, then you have the ability to go to them and say, you know, I really need your help. Or, you know, I could really use your insight. Will you allow me to bounce these ideas off of you? And if it's a superficial relationship, it's going to be difficult to do that. But if it is a deep, longer relationship, you're going to have the ability to benefit from the experience, wisdom, and counsel of those that you have formed that relationship with.
What about having a mentor? How important do you think that is?
I think it is essential. And I've been so fortunate to have mentors that were male and female, who have been there to help guide me. Some of them have been longer term. It's relationships that are decades. And some have been shorter term. But they're individuals that I know I can go to. And you form that relationship with them in seeking their wisdom, guidance, and counsel and their insights that you can go to them and say, can you help me with this? Can you? We all need that. I don't care who you are. Everyone needs that in their life.
It's so true, and it's so, I think, important because sometimes we feel like, oh, the people at the top, they don't need anyone. They're succeeding all on their own out there. And to understand that beneath every successful person are all of these support mechanisms, this framework
That's
of support
exactly
they've
right.
built for themselves.
That is right. And people who have built a strong life equity have a tendency to rely more on those as their sounding board, helping them to temper how they move forward.
Now, this idea of like life equity, obviously, just like in real equity, we want to make sure that it's ever increasing. So, Marcia, let me ask you to give our listeners a chic tip on how they can continue to increase their life equity throughout their life and their career.
Absolutely. One chic tip would be this. Keep a journal. Look at how you are spending your time every day and realize that what you should be doing is focusing on the important and the long term, those items that are going to be of benefit for you and your family in the long term. Make that your focus. Look at where your time is going. Is it being spent on the busyness of life, or is it being spent helping you open new doors? And then your job is to be ready when those doors open.
Excellent. And I think that's another female strength as well, that long-term vision, realizing, you know, we're the creators of the society, and we have to have that long-term view.
That's exactly right, and I hope that your listeners will follow up on all of that and be sure and visit our yourlifeequity.com website.
Absolutely. Well, Marcia, it has been a pleasure having you on today. The book is Life Equity, helps people realize their true value and pursue their passions at any stage in life. It is fantastic. I definitely recommend checking it out as well as the website. It's been such a pleasure getting to know you, Marcia, and I wish you the best in what you are doing and look forward to hearing more good things.
Thank you so much. Good to be with you, Elizabeth. Bye-bye.
Bye. This is Elizabeth Gordon signing off from this episode of Chic Perspectives. Check out more Chic Perspectives interviews on our website at chicentrepreneur.com. Once again, thanks to our sponsor, Pink Payments, merchant services for women, by women, and supporting women. For more information on Pink Payments, check out pinkpayments.com. We'll talk to you all next week. Until then, wishing you chic success.